built around a couple of stories and references to World War II, which makes me a little hesitant to bring in yet another story from that time today, but not so hesitant that I won't do it. So if you'll indulge me, one more World War II story, I promise to lay off of them for a good time in the future. Some of you have heard bits and pieces of this one before. This is a chance to put it all together in one place, and it's in a much lighter vein than what I was talking about last Sunday. This one's about a sailor who joined the Navy following America's entry into the war. He'd never been more than 100 miles or so from the places where he lived in the rural South before finding himself stationed on a naval base on the English Channel, the town of Plymouth. Being a devoutly religious fellow, this sailor wanted to maintain his devoutly church-going ways. He was a Baptist. There were no Baptist churches within walking distance of his base. He did learn that there was a Methodist church pretty close by, and figured that's probably the next best thing. So that was where he went. Went to a Sunday evening service there. And it was twilight when he went into the church. It was pitch dark when he came out. Plymouth was under a wartime blackout. All the streetlights had to be off. All the shades in your house, if you had your lights on, had to be pulled down. No businesses could display their lights, so as not to be a target for German bombs. So coming out of this church, the sailor walks out into pitch darkness. He can't figure out where he is or how he's supposed to get back to his base. And he's standing there trying to get himself oriented. And he hears this woman's voice say, "I think that sailor is lost." And she was right. The woman's name was Emily. She and her three daughters had also been at church. So Emily approached the sailor and told him if he wanted to walk along with them, their house was in the direction of the base where he was going, and they could show him his rest of the way from there, which he did. They came to the street corner where they parted. Emily decided she should do her bit for making the American servicemen feel welcomed in England, so she invited the sailor back to dinner the following Sunday. Military food being what it was, he gladly accepted. One dinner invitation led to another, and the sailor became a regular visitor in the home of Emily and Bill Northcott. It wasn't too long before the sailor and Emily and Bill's oldest daughter discovered a certain attraction for one another. The attraction became a love for each other, which led to their marriage in August of 1944 in that same Methodist church. A year later, they had a son, who, if you haven't guessed already, is the guy telling you this story. So when I said last Sunday that I was a child of World War II, I wasn't just using a metaphor, I meant that very literally. I've heard this story ever since I was a little kid. You know, the story of how Mom and Dad met. Part of the Eddington family lore. My mother's going to turn 80 this spring, next birthday. No doubt that story will be told again. My father passed away some time ago, but this story is part of his continuing legacy. Now, some idea of the kind of crazy leaps and bounds and connections my mind can sometimes take and make. I've been thinking about this story lately in light of this whole debate and conversation about intelligent design, which is the latest version of this seemingly endless creation evolution debate. We're already going to have a sermon presentation on this during my mini sabbatical in January. I think Steve Godwin's going to do that, so I'm not going to get into the intricacies of it here, but maybe this is something we can talk about at 11:30. Very briefly, if I understand what the intelligent design advocates are saying, they say that this universe of ours, which includes the various intricate life forms on this planet, could not have all come into being by happenstance. That'd be a designer, the capital D behind it all, with an intelligently conceived or preconceived plan as to how it was all going to happen. Now, I consider that premise to be kind of an interesting philosophical or religious or theological issue, which could be very legitimately discussed in classes in philosophy or religion or theology, but I certainly don't regard it as an alternative scientific principle as to evolution. So I got to thinking about this intelligent design thing, and I took it back to my father, or the man who became my father, standing outside that Methodist church. 61 years ago. Suppose he hadn't gone to the church that night, drew some kind of duty detail instead. Suppose there had actually been a Baptist church a little closer to the base, and that he went there instead. Suppose he had his bearings set pretty right so that when he came out of the church, he didn't get lost and just walked back to his base. Suppose Emily, my woman who became my grandmother, Emily, and her daughters hadn't gone to church that evening. Suppose. Well, there's two possibilities here. It was a purely chance encounter that put Emily Northcott and Gordon Eddington in the same place at the same time, and it was all that flowed from that, including yours truly. Or there was some larger hand, or force, or designer, or God behind what brought them together, because I was supposed to have been born, like all the rest of you, in accordance with some larger, intelligently designed plan. Now, I guess this is something reasonable people could have a discussion about, but I happen to come down on the chance encounter side of this issue. If dear old Dad had known where he was going that night, he would not have been dear old Dad, at least not dear old Dad to me. But the intelligent divine advocate would say, the very fact that you are here and that you've had a good and meaningful life for 60 years, and the fact that you have this intricately, marvelously constructed body, well, not that marvelous, but it is intricate. The very fact of all that means that none of it could have happened by chance. It's just too amazing. You had to be part of a greatly larger, cosmic, intelligently designed plan devised by a grand planner, as it were. Furthermore, this advocate will go on to say, if there was no such design or plan, then how can your life have any meaning? For if your life is the result of a random encounter, then isn't your whole existence just a random and meaningless one? That's the basic argument behind intelligent design. If it was intelligent design, it's all just random meaninglessness worth wallowing around in here. But my answer to that is no, it's not. Because it is how we live our lives and the choices we make in the course of living them that give our lives meaning, and not whatever processes may have been, designed or not, that brought us into existence. And it is on this point that I turn to the theme of Thanksgiving. For I feel a deep sense of gratitude for the life that has been given me to date. Part of that gratitude includes being thankful that my father was in what proved to be for me the right place at the right time. But intriguing as that story is, it's not one that I dwell on all that much when it comes to counting my blessings. Because, as I say, the real blessings are contained in what later flowed from that chance encounter. So in those moments when my life feels especially full to me, and I hope that each of you have had those moments as well. In those moments when my life feels especially full to me, when I can just say thank you for the life that I have, I feel that's all I need to say or feel. Who or what I am saying thank you to doesn't really matter that much to me. I can appreciate the poetic piece of saying thanks to God. That's fine, in a poetic sort of a way. But when it comes right down to it, who or what I say thank you to doesn't matter to me. I simply realize that I am blessed by the workings of a cloud of mystery that I exercise only limited control over. Now, I'm going to guess I stand here and I say this, and it doesn't sound like that much of a radical statement to most of you. And yet, on more than one occasion, as this season of the year approaches, some of my more theistic friends, and even at times some of my ministerial friends, will say to me, in a jocular sort of a way, something like, well, Thanksgiving's got to be a pretty challenging time for you since you don't have anybody to thank. Now, it's usually meant, and I try to take it that way, it's kind of a good-natured joke or a little bit of ribbing. You know, it's another one of those Unitarian Universalist jokes, which I have to admit I start getting a little weary of after a time. Because my reply to all that, not necessarily in the conversation, my reply to all that really is found in some very wise words by the late Reverend Raymond Bond, a Unitarian Universalist minister of many years, and they've stayed with me over the years. Here's what he said. Giving thanks has nothing to do with who or what produced the gift. It is rather a way of perceiving life. Even in the midst of hurt and disappointment, when we see ourselves in the universe that gives us life and touches us with love, we praise. Well, that sure works for me. Thank you, Raymond. My prayer of thanksgiving is my way of perceiving life. Even when life hurts, wounds, disappoints, or greatly frustrates me. Thankfulness is a way of perceiving life and seeing ourselves in a universe that gives us life and touches us with love. And that is all I find I need to know in offering up my cosmic thank yous. To Ray Bond's words, I would add those of the 14th century German mystic Meister Eckhart, who once said, if the only prayer you say your whole life is thank you, that would suffice. Now, Eckhart was a Dominican priest who had to endure several charges of heresy over the course of his life for maintaining that one could experience the divine directly with no intercessors, including the church. And I would say the fact that the church of his day considered this a heresy probably means he was speaking the truth. He was one of those persons who could see past the particulars of his own faith to the universal truths that are contained beyond and within the particular. If the only prayer you say in your life is thank you, that would suffice. Like Bond, Eckhart is speaking more about an attitude or a stance towards living than he is the content of a prayer or about who it is to be addressed to. To simply and profoundly encounter one of those moments of special blessing in our lives is to offer Eckhart's prayer of thanksgiving. There's one more thread. Ray Bond's words, though, that I want to pick up on before I close today. He writes of being thankful, even in the midst of hurt and disappointment. Yes, hurt and disappointment are realities that we come up against as much and sometimes not more than our thank you moments. And as I live in that push and pull between Eckhart's thank you on the one hand and the disappointments and frustrations and anger to which I referred a moment ago on the other, these are the truths I try to hold on to. However I may have gotten it, I'm living the only life I have, during the only time that has been given to me to live it, on the only earth on which I have to live it, and in a country I still believe in, for all the times that it has disappointed or angered me, along with all the times that it has blessed me. What other choice do I have, and what other choice do we have than to accept these truths and say yes to them? We are indeed aware of the unfinished and unhealed parts of our lives. We are aware of the unfinished and unhealed parts of the world in which we live them when it comes to the persistence of war and oppression and injustice. But if ours were not a life and a country for which we could give thanks, why would we even care about it in the first place? This was a message we wanted to give to our church school children earlier, as well as to you and the adult congregation in presenting the work of our UU Service Committee. For this committee, as I said earlier, through its programs and through its guest table appeal, offers us both a way of celebrating our abundance and a way of extending the blessings of not only direct assistance to those in need, a way of extending as well the blessings of hope and justice and self-determination as well. I hope you will include this fine organization in your giving in the weeks ahead. So we are continually called. Called by that which is greater than we know and whose name we do not know, to greater levels of wholeness, both within our own lives and a larger life of humanity and nature that is all around us. And it is, I feel, the ability to offer Eckhart's prayer that gives us the strength and the will to continue on our personal and shared journeys of spirit, hope, meaning, and wholeness. To say thank you to the whole of life, however it all came to be, and to live with graciousness and hope in the face of all that denies graciousness and hope, is to live a life of faith and to be the bearer of life abundant. To say thank you, then, is not to approve of all that comes your way or all that gets visited upon you. Rather, it is to take what life does give us and then, using the will and the resources and the power of the human spirit, by drawing upon the divinity that is contained in each of us, we then become agents of transformation. Transformation for ourselves, for those with whom we are here in community, and to a world that stands in need of our love and care. We're now in a season of whose themes are Thanksgiving, in gathering the harvest. In whatever ways you, we celebrate it over the coming day, I hope we can use some portion of that time for reflection, for discernment, for recommitment, and for rededication. Let us reflect upon the content of our lives and on the times in which we live them, as both bountiful and as troubled as those times are. And let us be discerning as to who and what our yes and our thank you to life means in these times, in order that we may each play a part, however great or small that part may be, in transforming them. On that note, I wish a very happy and blessed Thanksgiving to each of you. Let's sing together, closing hymn, number 67.